Can everyone please find a seat? Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming and joining us today. My name is Chanoch Lubling. I'm a longtime admirer of the Business Halacha Institute and Rav Chaim Cohen. Today's program promises to be an interesting and enlightening one. First, on behalf of everyone, I'd like to thank the founder and dean of Business Halacha Institute, our esteemed Rav, Rav Chaim Cohen Shlita, under whose leadership and guidance the Machon continues to thrive. I would also like to acknowledge the Chashuv Dayanim and Tamid Chachamim of the Business Halacha Institute for all they have done to help Klal Yisrael in the area of Choshen Mishpat and Business Halacha in particular. On behalf of BHI, I would want to give a heartfelt thanks to Aaron Reb Yochanan and Reb Leibel for not only being part of the Kollel staff, but instrumental in running the office smoothly and also in organizing today's brunch. Your presence today is a testament to your understanding of the importance and urgency of the work that BHI is doing. This task is not only important, it's difficult. As the world of business and technology develops, so does the complexity that arises to the Torah true businessman. Our Rabbanim need to be well-versed in the constantly evolving work of business, in law, understanding how these function and where halacha conflict may be present. They then need to apply their vast knowledge of Torah to find and create solutions that will allow us to conduct our businesses to the highest standards of halacha. To tackle these issues, the Business Halacha Institute, under the auspices of our Dean Rabbi Chaim Cohen, has developed a think tank of first-tier Rabbanim, Tamid Chachamim, who focus their attention on researching, developing, and providing applying halacha solutions for many contemporary business topics. As they put this knowledge to work in a major way, I would like to present to you some of the actual numbers highlighting some of the ways that we serve the business community during this past year alone. The Kollel Dayanus has currently 16 Avreichim Rabbanim and has successfully developed Tamid Chachamim and expert Dayanim in all areas of Torah, in particular business halacha. The Business Halacha Institute now has two affiliates, Sister Bati Dinim, one in Chicago and one in Miami Beach. The Beis Ora of the Business Halacha Institute conducts Dinei Torah at a most efficient rate in both in terms of cost and time. The Dayanim allow full time for all details to be presented without any additional fluff to ensure MS and efficiency. The Dayanim do not get paid by the hour, so people should know they get paid on a flat rate. They have no incentive to stretch out the din Torah. A hotline is available via phone and email. And Baruch Hashem, through this hotline and phone and emails and responses, BHI is able to resolve most questions. Shabbos, Ribbis, partners seeking guidance together, Yerusha, and when necessary, they have phone conferences. This provides guidance to the Amoinam and helps prevent disputes from happening. The hotline responds to over 200 questions a month. They also have contract services and consultations. So these include people come with contracts for advice how to write contracts, partner, employee, not compete agreements, loans, financing structures to avoid ribbis, Shabbos structuring for businesses to avoid questionable situation, and Amir Lakum. over 150 consultations regarding these kind of contracts and customer shtaris. Over 150 are done every year. Newsletter and publications. Nobody davens in any shul that doesn't see the publications of Business Halacha Institute to raise awareness so people know what could be a shaila. The newsletter is now in three languages. We see the English and the Hebrew. It's also available in French. That's used in France and Quebec. And now we're starting a newsletter in Spanish to be interpreted to Spanish. The Business Halacha Institute also puts out periodic contrasim on specific topics. There is one at the desk. When you leave, please pick up a contras. And they're planning next year to really start formalizing these contrasim. And anybody who wants to sponsor a contras, please speak to the office. There's also shiurim like these and other shiurim. Sometimes law firms ask a Business Halacha Institute to present on a topic. And much of these kind of business halacha awareness raise the bar of the entire expectations and availability that could be attributed to all of these efforts to publicize the importance of Chashir Mishpat in business and in everyday conduct. There's also a website that's being revamped where all of this is available. A new website is being created and will be rolled out in early this summer. As you all know, all of these efforts cost money. And so this brunch is our only annual fundraiser. We ask everybody to join us in supporting Business Halacha Institute, in sponsoring. You can sponsor another Kollel member. You can sponsor a Kuntress. Or you can just help us continue the website, the hotline. Everything involves costs. It is my pleasure this morning to call over Moshe Tov Yalif. He's the Mara D'Asra here in the Aguda, and there's nobody in Brooklyn, New York City, that hasn't heard of Rav Leif. He's involved in many Mojdis. He's a well-renowned speaker. Also in Minnesota, I think they also know Rav Leif. But certainly New York City. So without any further ado, I'd like to ask Rav Leif to say a few opening remarks.
Bershus, Sherub Sori, Agoyim Reb Chaim, Shlita, Choshev Rabbonim that are here, my good friend Rabbi Kohn, Achai V'Rei. Moriv Rebbe Reb Shlomo Zalman Obach Zatzal was Meshadach with Moron Reb Yashev Zatzal. Reb Zriel was married to Reb Yashev's daughter. So when I was in Kultura, they said over a Maisa, that she once went in to a glasses store to buy a new pair of glasses. And the ophthalmologist told her, why don't you try on these glasses? It's photo gray. If there's bright sun in Yerushalayim, your eyes won't be disturbed. So she said, I really don't know what to do. There's a shiloh about photo gray on Shabbos. My father says that it's mutter, and my shver says that it's osir. I don't know what to do. So the fellow looks at her incredulously. Frega Paisik. Years ago, Mora Moshe Zatzal said that Klal Yisrael have a need to ask shailas on all the chelkei Shulchan Aruch except for Choshen Mishpat. Yedain is a bucking in Choshen Mishpat, Moshe said. He has no shilas in Choshen Mishpat. The Mzogen Heinrich Moshe Zatzal, it's an under America. It's an under Welt. Nishno, was macht shilas in Choshen Mishpat? Malelm Choshen Mishpat. There are lawyers. There are businessmen who are teeth in the sugyas. There are rabbonim that give shiurim in Choshen Mishpat. And we talk amaratzim in choshev mishpat. And that's a shtickle naila. A little bit of knowledge can be a dangerous thing. But to recognize the value of Agayin Reb Chaim and his dayonim and his rabbonim and his chavrei hakoilol, I know many of them. They themselves are big talmidei chachomim, greatest talmidei chachomim. And to sit and to deliberate and to hear the shailas are being discussed, it's really the pair of New York. Avada was zeicher to so many wonderful talmidei chachomim, goyim, rashi yeshivas, rabbanim, tzaddikim, rebbes. But this newfound world of chesh and mishpat is taken to a very high level. And just start being mefalpel and you start seeing what we're lacking and what we need. And the continued growth of chesh and mishpat. Takanandavelt. Recently there was a shaila just to touch upon the nuances in chesh and mishpat. Somebody had asked somebody to watch his rollerboard in the airport. And the fellow didn't come back so fast, and this fellow moved on. He got on his plane. He was maskim. He said, leave it by me. Shaila is, the piece was lost. Is he mechuyev to pay for the lost piece? If he didn't do a maise agbo, he wasn't magbia, he didn't pick it up. He just said, leave it here by me and I'll watch it. Papashtas, don't start jumping, he's potter. Because he didn't do a maise kinyan to be mechayiv him in Hilchos Shomrim. Shulchan Aruch, Chayshin Mishpat, Reish, Sadi Aleph, Hey, Yesh Mi Shomer, Shashomer Hazem Miyad, Kishikibel Olov Lishmor, Eishoma Hine Lufonai, Hanach Lufonai, Nestalku, Habalim, Mishmiro, Chayiv Olov, Im Poshach, Afagav Shalei Moshach. And then there's a Yeshomer that says, that if he wasn't magbiyat, he didn't do a maisa kinyan, he just said, put it down over here, that he's not chayiv. If he didn't do mashiach in a place where mashiach is kinda. And the shach paskins like the second sheet. So it would seem it's rather clear cut, that if he did a maisa mashiach, it was magbiyat, he's kinda and he's mechuyiv in the shmira. But the Maizah, there are Paiskim that hold that if it was in a place, She'enai Meshumer, and the Mafkid left, so that Kabbal is a Kabbal of Shmira even without a Maizah Kinyan, even if he didn't lift it. But if he did lift it, Agboz Koine Bekom Mokim Shteit Mishulchan Aruch. If he rolled it on its wheels, in a place where Mashiach is kaina, or if he paid him for his services to be the Shomer, then there's a Kinyan Kesef that's involved, and he's Chayiv. But let's say he forgot it. So that comes to the Machlokes, if Shikcha is considered Einus, it's not considered Einus. Andra Halten is the greatest Pshia. Steht in Shulchan Aruch, Kuf Tzadi Zayin, Nalachas of Mekach and Memkar, Hagbo Koine B'chol Mokim. When it comes to Mashiach, it has to be a place where you can be Koine with Mashiach. As if you state in Shulchan Aruch, Havu Mashiach Einoi Koine Ela B'simta V'b'chotza Shal Shneim, Zog to Pesach Chayshin, Do Adim B'rachayiv Tzadi, Shein Derech B'nei Odom Lahakbid, So, Mestoma, that's the din in an airport, in a gate waiting area. But here's a simple thing, the Nesivas HaMishpat, Sifkot Yud Beis. There's so much to discuss about this simple little Maisa. According to Rav Vozna, there's no Pshia greater than forgetting. If, let's say, he put it someplace and he forgot where he put it, what happens if it was put in the overhead bin? L'chairah seems to be a safe place, and somebody else took it. is a simple act that starts covering chalakim of Choshen Mishpat. And Amol, nobody even thought to think, to discuss. He's Potter, he's Pashaya. But this Machon and these Groisa Tamir Chachomim, Uberoisham, Hagoyin Reb Chaim, have created a new Lomdish Sugya. Amol, if you learn Choshen Mishpat, at least in the Litvish Kreise, he went through the halachas, he had a rudimentary understanding, but every tag, every kutzah shel yud is learned with havana, with lomdus. There are kailim chayshimish, but all over the world, we happen to be involved with one in Eretz Yisrael, 165 Yungalite, Adon Rav Fleischman, but we're not here for that. We're here for something else. And you have to realize that it's not just the expertise in halacha that's important. It's bringing back the lomdus and the havana and the hekif in Choshen Mishpat. You know, Shteitin Chazal, that after the Churban Habayis, Ein Lai Lomei Ela Dalet Amel Shel Halacha. What's really pretty sad, so Reb Chaim was licked in Torah Degan Tzitzayit, Rav Katz, all the other Choshev Rabbonim, they ligged in Torah Avada. They left Yeshiva, they left Koilu, they left Ger, wherever they were. And the B'dalad al-Mashal Halacha. But what about other people in this room that are lawyers? Or corporate executives? Or learn an hour or two a day. That's the only place where they have the B'dalad al-Mashal Halacha. The rest of the day is without Shechina. As I state, Ein Lei Lomai, the Shechina of the Rebbein Shlom is B'dalad al-Mashal Halacha. Zok the Pri Tzadik, Reb Tzadik HaKoyin, Zatzal, Adov Nifla. If a person is a lawyer, if a person is a dentist, if a person is a corporate executive, and he conducts his business according to the Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch, Ein Bei Lomoi, that's where the Shechina is. I'm not saying that there's Shechina in business more than the Beis Medrash, I'm not a nar. But I'm telling you, you take the Shechina with you. When a person is Noeg, if he Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch, all Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch, especially Choshen Mishpat, Ein Bei Lomoi, Dalet Mishal Lachar. So Zvissen, that your business and your practice and your life is filled with Shechina. And the schus for the New York community and for the United States, ich gedenke meise with Reb Chaim. So I was in Minneapolis many, many years ago. And he was the dayan of Breuers and his Rav Machshir for the Shlachtos in Iowa. He's my cousin, we're very close. So I had a meise concerning certain equity, but it's not just stam equity, intellectual property. Two yidden punkt in my keila, one worked for the other. This is many years ago. He had started medical billing. He was a very wealthy man. And he had him work for him, prepare certain programs. There's one problem. He thought it was worth $3,000, and the fellow billed him $50,000. So right away they came to me at Din Torah. So I have a Kabbalah from my friend, Rabbi Yankel Reisman, in Long Island. Don't take a Din Torah among congregants. It's like a lose-lose situation. Because one's going to win and one's going to lose. And the one's going to win is going to forget about it. The one's going to lose will never forget about it. So I decided to call my cousin as a Goyin in Choshen Mishpat. He flies from Minneapolis, from Iowa. We'll make a Din Torah by me. Took two Yungalite. I wasn't involved in anything. So the Bezin was Rav Chaim and these two Choshev Yungalite. They were done, the Mekabel Kinyan. And then there was a ruling a few weeks later. After this ruling, the fellow who got his $50,000 was very happy. And the fellow who had to pay the $50,000 was very unhappy. So to show his gratitude, he stopped talking to me. For 2 years, he didn't talk to me. I'd get up to give a drasha, he'd walk out. Somebody wanted to slash his tires. I just ignored it. Some soif, the Rebbein Shlomo Zagutta, and this fellow's son entered into Shidduchim, he was learning in Beis Medrash Gevaya. He told his father, if you don't make up with the Rav, I'm not ever coming home again. So that week, he sent in a shliach, he told him, I'm going to take off his shoes, it's all good, you have this mechila, machalach, fine. He became a chassid, came to every shir, gevaldik. That's not the point. I once asked his son-in-law years later, why was Yishver so upset at me? I did it objectively. I bought in a Bucky and Chayshim Mishpat, the biggest in America. What's the problem? Yishver said, if the Rav did it, it would have come out right. He didn't do it. It didn't come out right. You can't win with this. I heard as I was walking up the stairs, they charge in a Shena Oifin and they don't charge per hour and they're not looking. They have to walk away sometimes and people aren't very happy with them. They have to do what the Rebbeinu Shalom wants. Like Chazal say, you look at both litigants as if they're Rishayim, they have no Schuyais. You look at the ground, you don't look at them. But it's done with such pikhis, such edelkeit. Several times people from the Gehillah had discussions with the Pchaim, such edelkeit. Even if the psak was, they couldn't do it. Even if it affected their business. He understands the fifth chelik Shulchan Aruch, and so did the Dayanim, the sensitivity of who you're dealing with. Mamlechas Chayim v'Gai Kadesh. Right, wrong. The bottom line is, Chelik Yidden. Rav Shem Zilhelfen, you know, Mezukta Ba'amaisa, that Rabor Ber came to America for an entire year. Communist, the whole shtot was closing down. And he spoke hundreds of times. And one time he spoke, very passionate plea in Yiddish. And let's ask a little kid in front. Did you understand what the rabbi said? He said, yeah. The rabbi said he needs money. So everybody plotzed and left. He came back to Kamenetz. The Baruch said over the Maise, Nish Norat El Fashtanin. Er is the einzige Vasat Fashtanin. The rabbi said, a rabbi needs money. Have a wonderful day. Zazayim et Hatzlacha. זה רזיין שמשיח צדקנו מערב ימינו אמן.
שכרך הרליף. It is my honor now to introduce the founder and the life behind the Business Halacha Institute of Chaim Cohen. As many of you know, he wears many hats, figuratively and literally. But Rav Chaim Cohen, if I could just say two words, he's really a pioneer in this field. Baruch Hashem today, there are Chayshim Mishpat, Chayolim and Batadinim throughout the United States and major towns. In Lakewood, there are a few. But really, he's not L'schach Neged Kulam. He's the one that put this whole concept on the horizon. We also have here Reb Zev Cohen from Chicago. But I just want to tell you that very few people know, and I heard this from the office a few times, that there's Rabbonim throughout the United States, Chashiv Rabbonim, who know how to paskin, but when they have a shaila in Chayshim Mishpat and they're ready to give up sack, they want to call just to make sure. They feel uncomfortable, not 100%, so they call Rav Chaim Cohen, the Business Halacha Institute, just for confirmation of the psak they're going to give. Also from Eretz Yisrael, the Business Halacha Institute gets a lot of calls because there are some shailas that involve American businesses, American law, and they're not mevinim in Eretz Yisrael, the batedinim, chashuv batedinim, they don't feel comfortable that they understand the business dealings and the business laws, so they call for advice to Rav Chaim Cohen. So without any further ado, I'd like to introduce Rav Chaim Cohen to say a few words.
First of all, thank you for coming here. Chazal say, something you don't like yourself, you shouldn't do to your friends. I will admit to the crime that I'm not a staunch, follower of going to all kinds of social events. That's very true. So I ask for your apologies that I keep you here. But I hope that at the end of the day, after we finish the program, you will come up with something, you come out with something that will help you to see, understand, and view matters in a better way. But before I come to what I have to speak about, the next one in the program is an old good friend of mine, going back already now, I think, about 20 years almost, maybe more even. Rav Zev Cohen, who is, as we know very well, one of the most, how should I say it, successful, beloved, whoever knows him knows the truth, Rabbonim in Chicago. We go back for a long time, when he started the program, the Choshen Mishpat program over there, your associates from then already. And from what I hear and understand, this girl over there created literally a revolution in town by those people who are interested to know and to understand. Without further ado, I would like to do Reb Zev to say a few words, and then it's my role, it's your role. Okay, I have to keep to the schedule. Reb Zev, please come over.
Okay, Rabbi, so I was asked to speak between 4 and 5 minutes. So we're going to try. In order to do that, I'm going to, as they say in English, cut to the chase and say, Bereshus, Harav, Agoyim, Rav Chaim Shlita, who is pained by anything I'm going to say right now, in Hilchos Ribbis, you're not allowed to pay back a loan that we all know with extra money. I do not get anywhere near Ribbis yet by coming here and paying back. I owe Rav Chaim a fortune. And this is just a little bit of a payment by coming in this morning from Chicago. And not to correct him, but the Kollel in Chicago is open for 20 years. My shaychus to Reb Chaim is a little bit more than 30 years. When I was still a younger man in the Lakewood Kollel in Chicago. And our Hakaras HaToyv is Ad Ein Shir. Okay, now I was asked to speak a little bit about Dayonis. So people think that there are a few Dayonim in the room here. Bereisham, Reb Chaim, and the younger light in the Kollel. So I'd like to say that Rashi doesn't say that. Rashi says everybody in this room is a Dayan. Every single person in this room is a Dayan. Where does Rashi say it? Rashi says in Parshas Kedoshim. Rashi says, Malamein, Shamoideid, somebody measures Nikra Dayan. He's called a Dayan. If somebody sells product, he's responsible to make sure that the product he sells is right. He's a Dayan. And then it says, "Imshike b'midos harihu makalos adin v'kori." I don't want to say what it says. You can go look Rashi yourself what it says. For somebody who's a dayan and doesn't pass incorrectly. So I want to say one more thing about dayonus. Everybody's a dayan. Al ton nes chaveira shetigilim koimoi. Means you're a dayan. You're a dayan to judge somebody else's matziv. Now, with that in mind, I'd like to mention three shailos halacha, no answers. Three shailos halacha, these came in the Kollel last week. There's a building that has frum tenants and has a restaurant in it. It's not negeya what the name is, not negeya where it is. And the restaurant has a deal. If you own a condo in the building, you get it, whatever it is, you get a reduced rate in the restaurant. So are you allowed to order from the restaurant for your friends who don't live in the building? Now, before you answer the Shiloh, I just want to say, you're a dayan on somebody else's money. Not on your money, on somebody else's money. Next, you own a condo. And the condo says you can't bring in a washer or a dryer. You have to use the washing machine and dryer provided by the condominium. I own a condo, so I'm going to sneak up a washing machine and dryer into my condo. Rabbi Yasha Paskins, if you go to a motel and you're not allowed to have an open flame in the room and you light a menorah in the room, it's a bracha levatola for Ner Chanukah and you weren't mekayim the mitzvah. How's that? Last shaila, you got an inheritance of $300,000. It's a lot of money, especially if it's somebody who doesn't have much money. Are they mechuyev to tell the school? Rabbi Isai, none of those shailas can be passed in by the person himself. Because you're a dayan for somebody else's money. You want to pass in a shaila because I want to give somebody money? That's mutter. You want to pass in a shaila because I want to keep somebody else's money? That you can't do. You have to call the Business Law Institute. But everybody's a dayan. And don't talk about other dayanim before you talk about yourself. Have I passed in all the shailas correctly in my dayanah's career? Should be only with Hatzlacha Rabbah. 4 minutes.
We're going to have this morning a panel. And in the panel, the panel consists of two Rashi Beis Din, Rav Chaim Cohen and Rav Zev Cohen, and two attorneys, litigators, who well-known, Mr. Israel Veder and Rav Tragi Goldschmidt couldn't make it, so Mordechai Gelber. Is he here? Yeah, okay. But before we have this panel, and the panel, by the way, will answer some known questions and answers, some prepared questions and answers that people submitted. Then we'll open it up to questions and answers. But before we do that, I would like to call Rav Chaim Cohen just to describe the litigation process in a Beis Din, and then Mr. Israel Veder, who can describe the court process for litigation. Rav Chaim Cohen.
Okay, I'm back here. So, if I'm not mistaken, Talmidei Chachamim marvim shalom ba'olam. So the task of Talmidei Chachamim, in particular, if you're sitting, do me a favor, could you stop it now? Thank you. Just a few moments, thank you. Thank you very much. If I'm not mistaken, so then, this is our office. We are obligated to do so. We should succeed in bringing shalom between people. As you know very well, money is the greatest unifier and the greatest divider in life. People communicate with each other because of money efforts. But then, if they get in a dispute about money, it is probably the most efficient, if we could use this term, divider between people. I didn't yet see people coming to Beis Din because they were able to get along. I didn't see it yet. Sometimes, rare exceptions, when there are issues of inheritance, of Yerusha, and people would like to know the halacha, how it works, so then maybe they would come to Beis Din. Maybe. I myself, if people ask me, if they call up and say, yeah, we have some dispute, I urge them not to come to Beis Din. Settle it between yourselves if you're able to. Have anybody who could help you in the mediation process to settle it. Once you give over your freedom to somebody else, it's against human nature. If you come to Beis Din and you accept the authority of the Dayanim, what you do by definition is you give up your freedom. You leave it in somebody else's hand. How do people say? I'm signing away my life, even if it's $5. That's against human nature. And here, once people are in dispute, we are supposed now to reconcile between them. And to see that you should be able to live in peace with each other later on. I was not aware, my good friend and cousin, Rabbi Liv, that in the aftermath of the dinteri that was there in Minneapolis many, many years ago, that he never suffered from it. He was able enough, was gentle enough not to share with me the news that he, in the aftermath of it, had problems in his rabbanus. I didn't know about it. But it doesn't surprise me. It does not surprise me. So therefore, my personal opinion is, if you're able to work it out without Beis Din, by all means, do it. But once you end up in Beis Din, then you should appreciate what you did. And this is, you gave up your freedom. It's in somebody else's hands to decide what they feel is right or wrong. If you like it, you don't like it. If you come to Beit Din, to use Beit Din as a tool to win, I hope that Dayan was smart enough to realize that they should not be manipulated. And consequently, as such, they will try to do what they feel is right, regardless of the response of this person who came up to Beit Din, who will initially understand that he's right. Here I want to mention one detail which is very often misunderstood, even concerning our own Beit Din. Sometimes people ask me, tell me, do you accept Tawanim, lawyers, in Beit Din? I say, why not? People usually say no. People usually say, this Beit Din does not accept Tawanim. But we do accept Tawanim. However, what's the however? The however is, the Tawin cannot manipulate Beit Din either. He cannot take over the decorum in Beit Din either. Which, in my opinion, probably is the most negative factor that reflects on the state of affairs in Beit Din today is a lack of decorum. In other words, if everybody could say, and forgive me the term, open his mouth in whatever fashion and way, regardless of respect to the other party and specifically to Beit Din, immediately the concept, the respect, is not there anymore. It's not only that the Elokim Nitzavada scale that we have here, the heavenly support and guidance, it's simply human nature. If you don't demand respect, you don't have respect. So therefore, Beit Din needs always to be careful about keeping the decorum. If the Torah understands that, we are ready in business. Because then he knows his limitations. He knows he cannot personally attack the other party. He could say whatever he wishes from a legal point of view. He could give the case for his client perfectly fine. And we could even use him. How? If he could convince his client that he is wrong in this particular situation, on this detail, that detail, try to compromise. Perfect. Therefore, as far as we are concerned, I think it's a good thing. But he needs to know his place. And now, I will just explain the other part of it. And you forgive me if I'm going to say something about American culture. You know, I'm a European. In addition, I had my training, whatever you call it, not in the United States of America. As an observer of culture, I will tell you what America is all about. One word, freedom. The freedom of the individual, which is a great thing. The founding fathers of this nation here, they're very much interested to get rid of what they thought to be wrong in the system as it was practiced for centuries in the old country. Perfectly fine. As Yidden, we should appreciate that with a limitation. What we buried here in the States is the respect for authority. This is in Rabbanos. This is when you're talking about institutions, and in particular when it comes to Beit Din. There's no authority. If you have this little contrast here, I wrote over an article about it. And I will not go in length about it because, first of all, the chairman will not permit me to do so. And I'm afraid of it. It's one of my chaverim, the shtibel. And secondly, it's not necessary. If you take a few moments to read it, you will have it. You'll understand it. Therefore, when people walk into Beit Din, they are not willing to accept authority, although the sign. Consequently, the concept of respect is not here. And if you want to achieve anything in life, a parent with a child, a rov in his congregation, and a dayan in Beit Din, there must be respect. And if there is no respect, you don't achieve it. One other word. And my good friend, Mr. Wieder, will speak about it in the Defun. I don't want to have here the same matter being discussed time and again. Mr. Weider, I know that part of your presentation will explain the difference how matters are being dealt in courts and how in Beis Din. So I only will say a few words about Beis Din, a few words, and this is as follows. It's by nature that if people come to Beis Din, being that Beis Din does not know the case, at least not supposed to know the case at all, we are here now on a search mission, trying to find out what happened here. So therefore we want to have the Baldin, the litigant, whoever he is, maybe the defendant, doesn't matter, to present his case on his own, even if the Torah or the lawyer is going to tell me, he doesn't know how to present it. Wonders about wonders. Once he opens his mouth, he knows very well. When it comes to his own stuff, everybody knows how to present it very well, at home and in court, both cases. And once the first one to be given the floor will explain it, will by nature and definition have more time to explain it, because we need to learn about it. It's not the deposition that makes it. We have no clue. We don't want to have depositions first. We don't want to have here the lawyer manipulate the matter. We want to hear it from the Baldin himself. And I don't want to respond to it. And therefore, the second one will not need so much time to respond to it. This is a fundamental difference between how matters are being dealt in Beis Din versus in other matters. I'm resting my case. I will not speak in length, or didn't speak in length, I hope so. I'm just concluding with those 2 points. And this is, I'm begging people, firstly, don't come to Beis Din. Settle it on your own. You do come to Beis Din, please understand if there's no giving respect to Beis Din, you're not getting anywhere. Thirdly, when you come to Beis Din, please understand that you cannot manipulate Beis Din. You cannot use it as a tool to achieve what you feel is right and wrong, or wrong, whatever. It's in the hands of other people who hopefully are neutral about it. A dayan who is Nogia Bedova is not permitted to be part of the panel. Once that happens, maybe, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would help us that we bring about to Marvim Sholom Be'olam. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Yisrael Weider. I'm an attorney in New York.
Mr. Weider, speak up.
I want to address a question that I'm asked very often as a practicing attorney. People come into the office and they say, I have this dispute. Should I go to court or should I go to Beis Din? I want to explain why, from a court perspective, the court encourages, and we are certainly better off in Beis Din than in court. And I want to explain that from a secular perspective. Before I say that, I just want to point out Rabbi Cohen in his presentation didn't try to let you see Beis Din with rose-colored glasses. He said it exactly the way it is. And that in and of itself is the first point why Beis Din is better. You come to Rabbi Cohen's Beis Din, or to any decent Beis Din, it's no chachmas, it's no playing around. I'm going to say this and pretend that. That's not the way it's going to be in Beis Din. That's the first point. I would just continue from what Rabbi Cohen said. Second thing I want to say is, New York itself, and this is both New York and the federal courts, going back 100 years, encouraged arbitration. They passed the law. There was a time when the courts frowned on arbitration, but then in 1920, in New York, they passed the law, which is today what's called Article 75 of the CPLR, which recognizes arbitration. In fact, it recognizes arbitration so much that the arbitrators have been given a quasi-judicial position. And the quasi-judicial position actually got us into trouble, because what happened was that the courts held that Section 5 of the judiciary law applies to arbitrators, and a judge is not allowed to have a hearing on a Sunday. So there were a lot of dinner Torah that were going on Sunday for obvious reasons. That's the most convenient day for everybody. And what was happening is there were a few cases that came up to court, and the argument was an arbitrator is a quasi-judicial person, and therefore they're not allowed to have hearings on Sunday. And there were several courts which actually ruled this way and invalidated the arbitration. I want to point out how the courts today, after 100 years, view arbitrators. By the way, that law was changed. That law now provides that if you agree to have arbitration on Sunday and the court knows that you agreed to that consensually and it wasn't forced on you, then you can have the hearing on Sunday as well. And people should make sure when they sign a shtar birurin that it has that provision that hearings can be held on Sunday. But getting back to the view of the courts of arbitration, the courts view arbitrators as quasi-judicial, parties. Now, the reason for that is, the reason why the courts recognize arbitration, and it's in this case Beis Din, is because there are many things that are easier in arbitration that the courts cannot deal with. Firstly, in court, it's, you know, there was a discussion over here about decorum in Beis Din. In some ways, the decorum in court basically puts you into a position where you have to do a lot of things very formally, and it takes a lot of time, and it stretches out over a long period of time. And if you do it the incorrect way, if you don't write the right things, it's possible to have the whole case dismissed. So therefore, you have to be very careful. All of this does not happen in Beis Din. You don't have to prepare exact language and plead in specific ways. You basically come into Beis Din and you put forth your argument and your position. Now, there's another thing also. When we come to Beis Din, we want the Beis Din to paskan l'halacha. To summarize the court's view of arbitration, it really goes straight into accepting Beis Din. Just to read to you from a Supreme Court case, which is applicable to the Federal Arbitration Act, which is really very similar to the New York Article 75 on confirming arbitration. And what it says is, Congress directed courts to treat arbitration agreements as valid, irrevocable, and enforceable. The Federal Arbitration Act establishes a liberal policy favoring arbitration agreements. Not only did Congress require courts to respect and enforce agreements to arbitrate, it also specifically directed them to respect and enforce the party's chosen arbitration procedures. That means, and this is written by a federal court, and it's not the province of this presentation to go into the differences between federal jurisdiction and state jurisdiction, but this comment is true as to New York arbitration as well. If you choose to go to Beis Din, that's irrevocable, it is enforceable, and it is valid. And this is a message that the courts are sending. Go to Beis Din rather than coming to court. That's in essence what it says here. Now the court has some reasons why they say that, but there's a very important reason that people may not realize unless they've actually been in litigation. We have something called discovery. Rabbi Cohen mentioned beforehand depositions. Depositions is maybe the tip of the iceberg of discovery. I'm in a case right now where I've had to produce 50,000 pages. And at the last hearing when I was in court, my adversary had the audacity to tell the judge that I had produced nothing. Now, we're going to be busy with discovery for a long time to come, and I don't need to explain to you that to produce 50,000 pages costs a fortune. But we're going to be busy for years with discovery, what was produced, what had to be produced, what should be produced. That does not exist in Beis Din. Beis Din is going to listen to the case. There are times when Beis Din will want to see certain documents. There is a certain limited amount of discovery where Beis Din will say, let's see this, or allow one party to see something or to hear something. But in general, you're not going to have discovery taken a life of its own and force a person to do disclosure that's really not relevant. The courts today have a very lenient attitude towards discovery. They say, why don't you answer? What does it hurt you? And it's really not practical at all. And the attitude of the courts right now, and this is embodied in the latest version of New York discovery laws, basically allows all discovery. The only thing you're limited to is what you can bring in court. So in Besdin, you don't have any of this. If there's something unrelated to the litigation which is embarrassing to you, or you don't want to reveal it for whatever the reason is, in Besdin, you won't have to do that. In court, you will have to reveal it and then pray that the judge won't allow it into evidence. There's another reason also. Perhaps this is one of the reasons the courts encourage arbitration. The statistics in Brooklyn are pretty dismal when it comes to court. The first thing is that the court's budget is nowhere near what it should be. Right now, according to the statistics of the administrative judge, and I take this with a grain of salt because the administrative judge is trying to show that he's handling cases. According to the administrative judge, in 2017, there's 13,469 pending cases. Now, there is a total of 46 judges to handle 13,469 cases. That comes out to 300 cases per judge. Now, when you think about that, you may ask, well, that's very interesting for one person to handle 300 cases. As an attorney, I can tell you it is physically impossible. But the quick answer is that if you ever came to court and you saw a calendar which was 200 matters on one day, and you watch the attorneys take out your watch and see how long they're before the judge. If they get 5 or 10 minutes, they're very lucky. If the judge listens to the end of those 10 minutes, they're even luckier. I try to keep my argument to 2 minutes because my belief is whatever I'm going to say in 2 minutes, I have a chance. Anything beyond 2 minutes, I don't have a chance. Now let's look at Besdin. You come into Besdin. Besdin is going to listen to everything you have to say. They're going to give you a few hours. They don't have 300 cases. They don't have another 100 attorneys waiting online after you. It's a completely different world. I'm not even going to go to trials. This is the motion practice that we have to go through. There's another statistic that's very interesting about the Brooklyn courts. And by the way, this applies to five counties to an extent. Brooklyn happens to be a very busy court, but the other courts are very busy as well. The types of cases that the judges handle are not the type of disputes that would usually end up in a Besdin. Out of all the cases, there's a statistic of 6.5% contract disputes. That means that when you go before a judge in Brooklyn, out of 100 cases that the judge hears, less than 7 are contract cases. I could go further into the statistics, which are, by the way, all available online. There is something to the effect of 2 to 3 cases that are actually finalized by a decision. Most cases are settled because after a couple of years and maybe a few $100,000, the litigants decide that's enough and they settle it. And that's actually one of the things Robert Cohen said. Before you come to Besdin, before you litigate, think about settling. I would add, if you end up going to court, you're going to settle anyway, except after a few $100,000 and a few years of agmas nefesh. So you're probably better off before you start, try to settle the matter. I want to just add one last point. I've already gone over my time. I'm sorry for that. I want to add one last point. Very often when I tell clients you should go to Besdin, and I explain it to them, and there's more points than what I made, they invariably say, oh, we heard this about Besdin, we heard that about Besdin. I want to add, keeping in mind what Rabbi Cohen said. When I've been practicing for a good few years, and people come into me with stories, they tell me a story, and they want to retain me to litigate. I want to tell you an amazing statistic. Not once did anybody sit down in my office and say, you know, I'm wrong. It's an amazing thing that every single client that came into my office was always 100% right. Now, when you have an attitude that you're right, and then let's say you go to Beis Din, and the Beis Din says, well, you're not 100% right, maybe 25%. There are many people that just, they can't accept that. But more important than that, the last thing that I find people telling over stories, whenever I hear stories, people say, this happened, and I heard this happened with Yankel, and this happened. Yankel's always telling how he was right and how he won. When somebody comes out of a Beis Din and they lost or they won 25%, they're not walking around telling everybody, you know, I lost in Beis Din, or the Beis Din thought that was only 25%. Either they don't say anything, or they say, I was 100% right, and the Beis Din didn't listen to what I had to say, or whatever the case may be. In reality, what's happening is people on their own disputes have great difficulty seeing that they maybe did something wrong. And therefore, when they go to Beis Din and they learn in Beis Din that maybe what they did, they weren't 100% right, or that they're not entitled to win, it's very hard for them to accept that. So I would say, when you hear from someone else, oh, I heard about Beis Din this and this, the first thing I would say is, don't be so quick to listen to somebody who's sharing his personal experiences. And if you do, don't listen to someone who feels he has had a bad experience. People have, they think they've had a bad experience, but there's nothing to learn from that. The best thing is to go to your Rav or to go to someone who's a Talmid Chacham, to tell them the situation, and then decide whether you go to Beis Din. Invariably, the question will be, should you settle or should you go to Beis Din? But certainly, all these stories that I've heard, Beis Din did this, Beis Din did that, the ones that I've been forced to look into, because I had a client that was pushing me on it, it always turns out that the Beis Din actually made a lot of sense and perhaps was, or not perhaps, was more right than the client. I want to thank Rabbi Cohen for giving me the opportunity to speak. And again, I just want to reiterate, it's clear to me that the New York courts would prefer people go to Beis Din than come to the New York courts. Thank you. Good morning.
I just want to say that I should have mentioned before that this is being live streamed throughout the world, so there are many more people watching this than just listening to this than just the people in this room. The second thing, as Mr. Veder spoke, and I also practice as an attorney, I can give him worse horror stories about discovery. The Beis Din, BHI Beis Din, I'm told, and it shocked me, but I've asked a few people, most of the dentures are accomplished in two sessions. Each session, 2 to 3 hours, many times in one session, but a second session is needed because people want to bring more proof, they want to bring other papers, but most dentures are resolved in two sessions. That's really an amazing, I don't think anybody can say that about secular court. The second thing is, I've never heard, in my experience, someone come out of court and the losing party to say the court is right. I don't think I've ever heard that. But in Beis Din, many times, the Business Halacha Institute get calls and get letters to saying, I realize the Beis Din is the losing party. Beis Din was 100% right. And that's another reason to go to Beis Din. Anyway, without further ado, we're going to have a panel. And the panel, the moderator will be Rav Bensian Meisels. And the panelists will be the two Chashuv Beis Din and the two Chashuv attorneys. And there are some questions that people have submitted. We're going to deal with those first. Then we're going to open it up to the floor.
First, I would like to take this opportunity express my on my behalf and on behalf of the whole of Business Halacha Institute our appreciation, Akudas Atoyev, to Reb Chaim Cohn for all he did for us and is still doing. May Hashem give him much nachas and siyata d'shmaya and asucha b'chol in yunim.
Amen.
Some of the questions were already answered through what we heard until now, so I'm going to try to rearrange some of them. So first, we would need to know what is the difference between arbitration and mediation. Sometimes when we come to Beis Din, arbitration agreement is required by the Beis Din by both parties should sign an arbitration agreement. Why is that necessary? What's the difference between mediation and arbitration?
Well, mediation is not binding on anybody. Mediation is just a fancy word for trying to make a pshara between two parties. Sometimes the court used to have a program where they ordered mediation. That has been discontinued. But mediation, the court would require that you can't disclose what you said at mediation, which means that in the process of settling, people would reveal certain things, and if that failed, then you would come to court. That would not be that would not be able to be used against you. Arbitration is where you agree. You have to do it in writing as well. You agree to submit your dispute to arbitrators, a shtar birur in Beis Din. And that is binding. That's the language that I read from the Supreme Court. It's valid, it's enforceable, it's irrevocable. You sign that you're submitting to the Dayanim, and the Dayanim act, we saw, in a quasi-judicial manner. So that's what arbitration is. Mediation is just a pshara, which maybe the Beis Din would do before you start, but I'm not familiar if the Beis Din would do that.
Just in terms of mediation being a good faith attempt to resolve a dispute between parties. I have a situation this week coming into my office where I don't do litigation and I don't do arbitration, but what I try to do is settle matters. I'm really a contracts attorney, and when you have two sides on a contract who are disputing something, we try to resolve it before it gets any further. So we have a situation where the two sides are going to come into the office. I'm going to be presenting my client's side, and the other side is going to have his own financial advisor presenting it, and we're going to try to come to a resolution of it in a good faith, pleasant way. So that, you know, I would say I do mediation from time to time as an attorney doing contracts work, because it's something that you try to do before the disagreement festers into something further. There are secular mediators as well, besides the court mediators, and I try, even though it may be halachically permissible, we try to avoid that. We try to keep things within our community.
Would Beis Din agree to do mediation, or would Beis Din only accept a case when an arbitration agreement is signed?
On a general note, obviously we would prefer that mediation took place. The chances that both parties walk out more satisfied is given if you have mediation. However, what we do experience from our experience is that once they end up already in Beis Din, they already passed the stage of mediation and they come for the sole purpose of having done arbitration. Now, it's also true that at the outset, when they come to Beis Din suggests to them to settle between them, which we call pshara. So if they can do that, and as I said earlier, if they already reach the stage where they must litigate against each other, so then arbitration is in place. I just need here to add something, and this is that Rabbi Meitler, we're going to ask a question about pshara in the arbitration agreement, or should I address it now? I can address it now. Okay. So now, when people come to Beis Din, being that everybody is 100% convinced that he's right, so therefore he says, I want to have din. Din means I want to have what the halacha says about it. If I'm right, I'm right. And that's a chassadik. So therefore, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. That's what he said before. But he could have found out very easily if he's wrong without coming to Beis Din. You know, forgive me my sarcasm. But as it should be, I don't want to have pshara. So what happens is that we are telling him, no, if you don't accept on pshara, if you don't accept on compromise, you don't accept to deal with the case. How come? Why don't you do that? So first we're going to tell him, because it says in the halacha that the dayanim are obligated to suggest that there should be pshara, there should be some kind of compromise between them. True that one of the major reasons is because by compromising you might maybe facilitate kind of shalom, a little bit of understanding between each other, but it's not a given. There's another reason, which is, as far as I'm concerned, as far as halacha is concerned also, is even more compelling, and this is as follows. There was a great, very great Tana. You probably heard about him, Bapshim Bayechoi. You know, this week we have something about him. You don't have to go to Miron for this purpose. But Bapshim Bayechoi made a statement. He said that we are today not anymore in the capacity to find out the real halacha. Bapshim Bayechoi, could you imagine, from the greatest Tanoim? Therefore, there's halacha in Shulchan Aruch where it says that Tzorech HaDain is Rachik B'chol HaYicholes. The Dain has, with all his ability to see, to distance himself, Lodin Din Torah, to Paskan Din Torah only, meaning that it should be, as Torah says, what is right, what is wrong, because we don't really know what is right and what is wrong exactly according to halacha. Now, why is it so? It's already a different matter, but it's our shortage of understanding, our limited capacity in all areas to do so. So therefore, we must have pshara. You could call it whatever name you give it, pshara kov ledin or not, but we need to have pshara. There's something else also which I need to explain here, and it goes as follows. There's a concept in halacha, sounds very odd, but it's used by the poskim, which is called mishpat ha'enushi, meaning what people understand to be the right or the wrong thing. There's a famous Avner Nezer about it. I won't go into lengths about it, but Avner Nezer talks also about it, and the Chayim talk about it. We feel it's something which is correct and right, meaning there's no halachic, clear halachic basis to pass in this way, but any person will say, this is not right, this is not yosher, you don't do that. And this is not accepted by people. So this is something that Beis Din needs to also to reckon with and to include it in the process of giving a psak din. So therefore, the concept of pshara is a must in Beis Din. And one should at least give so much trust and credence to Beis Din to find out what's the right thing here to do, although the mefurush din Shulchan Aruch is not being found. For all those purposes, we have people right and understand and sign on the agreement for arbitration. So the ruling very specifically states that they accept sharing basing. Thank you.
What if one of the parties do not want to sign on the arbitration agreement? Would Besden force them to sign on that?
Well, forcing is a very strong term. I mean, the question is, could we force him? We don't really have today the tools how we could force a person. The most we could say is we don't accept this dispute to adjudicate. Once upon a time, yes, there was a possibility that Beis Din could have forced people to come over, but this authority is, as we know very well, missing today. But it says clearly in Halacha, yes, that if the circumstance would be there that we could force people, yet we would do that. We would do that because it says clearly in Halacha that you could force a person to accept Shoah. Yeah.
If I can just add to that, under CPLR Article 75, you need to have an agreement to arbitrate in writing in order to get it confirmed by the court. So it's very important to get the agreement in writing, and also you should specify the exact parties, because if you come to court and it's the wrong parties, you're not going to be able to get it confirmed either.
We very much appreciate this legal advice, and we have tried to follow it to the dot. Thank you.
If I could, I'd like to add one thing here. When I moved to Chicago, the first shiur I gave as younger man in the Kollel was about a concept which I never thought about all the years I was in Lakewood. In America, we have a concept called separation of church and state, which is a very basic tenet of this government and has been something which has been very beneficial for the people. In Klal Yisrael, there's not separation of church and state. The church is in the state. Every time there's a din Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in the courtroom. Now that is something that's not written explicitly in the Ishtar Berurin, but whenever we have a Din Torah, I try to start by saying, in this room, right now, the Shekhinah is here. That's what's happening. As I state in Rashi and Chumash, right? That's what Chazal say. Right? The Shekhinah is here. So I regret that many of our Dinei Torah initially were about shetels. And what I regret is that we once had a Din Torah, and the woman who lost, I regret I never taped what she said. She said she felt the presence of the Shekhinah, and she accepts that she is the losing party. Abayisai, that's what's going on in the Beis Din. Now, as was mentioned earlier, all the stories about Batei Din, this way and that way, we all know that a chain is only as strong as its weakest link. If Balabatim are not going to back Batei Din, you can have the greatest Dayanim you want, there won't be any Batei Din. What these type of forums create is a trust that we need Batei Din. We need Batei Din. And as was mentioned earlier as well, Baruch Hashem, since the Molchama, we've had great Poiskim who have enumerated and elaborated on Erechayim and in Yeridea and in Ebenezer when it's needed. And we're in the final stages of elaborating Shulchan Aruch. And it's very challenging, very challenging. But if people come in, both litigants, and as Rav Chaim said earlier, it's not easy for anybody to come in. But if people come in with the attitude, we're not doing anything different than any other time you want to meet up with the Shekhinah in a sukkah, in a Beis Knesses, in a Beis Medrash, in any other mitzvah. The Shekhinah is here. And we're all trying to figure out what we're supposed to do. If the money's not mine, I don't want to have it. That's why we go to Beis Din. And the last thing is that all this with mediation and arbitration, you can't call somebody up and say, I want to have a Din Torah, and this is my tainus. I tell the people all the time, I cannot listen to you. I cannot listen to you. I cannot listen to you. I try to say it in many different ways. Some people say I'm eloquent sometimes. But after 5 or 6 or 8 times of saying the same thing in the same way, it's very difficult. You cannot tell the dying what the case is about more than the smallest details. Because that's also part of that law. You cannot answer a chayshe mishpat shayla on the phone. It's not a shayla of what bracha do you make on sushi. That you can answer on the phone.
I don't like sushi.
Okay, that's one answer on the phone. But that's why this is so inspiring. That people want to come, that people want to know, and you, all of us together, should be able to take care of these arbitrations and mediations and all these things to realize that's what a Beis Din is. That's what you should be able to do. Sorry.
Someone received the hazmana from a Beis Din, and the response that he answered was that he would prefer to go to Zablo. What is the difference between a Beis Din and a Zablo, and does he have the right to demand that?
If you want to know the change that took place historically over time, so this is a perfect example for it. What is Zablo? Zablo is Zeboru lo Echot ve Zeboru lo Echot, which means that each of the parties, together with the Dayonim, are choosing a Dayan. Reuven chooses this Dayan, Shimon chooses the other Dayan, both together then in coordination with the Baridin, choose the third one. In Halacha, it seems to be that this is the preferred method, since everybody who chose his Dayan feels that he's able to find any possible halachic valid merit for his case, and therefore will have more confidence in the Beis Din. So that's what it says in Halacha. Now, if you're talking about abuse, legal abuse, so then Zablo today is the most abused form of Beis Din. What really happens is not that the Dayan here now becomes an independent Dayan, appointed to be part of a panel which is independent, but it's not so. And he, in either other way, for whatever reason that might be, he becomes another representative of the litigant. He becomes another advocate for him. And it's almost a given that each Dayan who is a borer here for whatever side is going not to side internally for his client. quote unquote, and the one who is in the middle, so to say, will now see to navigate between both sides. Also, being that in Zablo, Bederech Klal, what happens is the decorum is not as it should be, and precisely because of what I just told you now, because every dying feels that he owes to his client, rightfully or wrongfully. I'm not now discussing the merit of the situation. I'm just calling the baby and its name exactly how it is. So therefore, Zablo is such, might very well, or not only might very well, does in fact prolong the process and gives Beis Din a very, very bad name. As such, I for one, I'm the humble opinion, or not so humble opinion, that today we should choose Beis Din. Three Dayonim who are completely independent, have nothing to do with the case, are not being paid by the Bali Din, which is not the case by Zablo, where the Dayonim are being paid by the litigants. It shouldn't be like this. What really should be, and I'm explaining here in this article at the right over there, in absence of having kehillos, where the kehillos appointed the Dayonim who are not being supported by the litigants, in absence of that, we need to find other ways how to see that Beis Din should function, not influenced by being paid by the Bali Din. My solution to that, forgive me using this word, my solution, but what I'm suggesting, and that's what the effect we did, is creating organizations, where an organization like the BHI, it might be any other, Halevai to be many, many organizations like this, right, who produce Dayonim, who are not being paid by the litigants, but are being paid not for the case at all, get a salary, whatever the should be, but not at all influenced by the monetary factor involved here. So therefore, also Paskin already say, already before our times, that the preferred way how to go about it would be a regular Beis Din versus Zablo. Thank you.
Sure. In the contract provision I put in, into the any type of agreement, I have, of course, an arbitration clause for Beis Din, and I leave a blank unless I know the Beis Din that my client would like me to draft. I just leave a blank, and I do typically do. I get a comment back asking for a Zablo provision, which I wholeheartedly reject, as the Rav said. In addition to the Rav's comment, I would like to add also that my experience has been with Zablo, that if that happens, it's going to take a very long time. I have a client that agreed to go to Zablo. He didn't have an arbitration clause in his contract originally, and the matter is still going on. It's probably 3 or 4 years. And that's because when Beis Din sets a meeting, or one Rav sets a meeting, if he's the arbitrator, that's the time of the yeshiva. When it comes to Zablo, you have to come to three different Dayanim, and you have to set their schedules. If you have already having Zablo, you probably also have Toanim, so now you have five schedules. Then in addition to that, you have the two litigants, so you have seven schedules. So the matter can take months and months and months before you get to a situation. So I'm really very, very insistent on not even allowing in the second instance a Zablo provision of the Beis Din, if the Beis Din can't sit. But I put in, if the Beis Din can't see the case, I put in a second Beis Din, if the first Beis Din can't sit. But we don't allow a Zablo provision, I think maybe once. In all of the years, I've allowed Zablo to take place because both of the parties insisted on it, and they understood the ramifications of it.
What would be your opinion regarding, I understand that mediation is not a problem to do with anybody, whether it's a businessman or whoever it should be. What about going to a businessman and accepting that he should be an arbitrator between two litigants? Would that be a suggested thing to do?
You should ask me. So I'm averted outside business. What are you saying? Yes.
A businessman.
As I said earlier, whatever you could do to avoid Beis Din, do it. What I mean to say by this is that if there's any kind of constellation that makes it possible that people are able to settle this matter, they should do that. However, there are certain halachic limitations to that which are not so much known to people, and this is. Preferably, you should go to an arbitrator. An arbitration, again, means accepting his authority to finalize the case. If you go to such a person, so then preferably go to a person who is of the Jewish faith, meaning a Yid. So a non-Jewish lawyer, it's a different story. It's not so simple in halacha that you could take a non-Jewish lawyer as an arbitrator where his decision will be binding. Halachically, it's very questionable. In particular, if he will take in consideration or must even take in consideration a set of laws which are not according to halacha. So therefore, take somebody who is a Jewish person and who will guide himself according to halacha more, or at least accept even the arbitration, whatever it should be, not according to laws of the land, bedafka. There is an exception to that, and this is when we're talking about arbitration panels established by industries, like the famous one is the Bishturin Diamonds, in the diamond industry, where people are bound even sometimes to accept their authority, being that those panels are adjudicating their cases, not according to a state of law of the land about what is the custom in that particular industry. It has a different status. Even in that situation, there are different opinions in law about it, whatever there should be. But why don't you live in peace with each other? May I suggest that one? We're living in the sphere of Hod. That's very good, you know. It's helpful about it. Wishful thinking. Thank you.
If one hire a legal advocate, a Tayin or a lawyer, to represent them in Beis Din?
Doesn't matter. As far as I'm concerned, doesn't matter. The lawyer might maybe think, my good colleagues, please forgive me, that they are more knowledgeable because they are lawyers and therefore they could speak more formally and so forth. Chas v'shalom, I don't say that. I don't care. But the job of anybody who is here appointed by his litigant, by his client, to help him in this case is, A, to coordinate the case itself and write it in a concise way so Beit Din should understand what it is all about and not to veer into avenues which are not relevant and to, so to say, control the situation, right? You don't need necessarily crowd control. That's probably more the job of the Beit Din itself. But I'm quite infamous for that. But whatever there should be in... yes, it's a very good thing. As I said earlier, right? And as I said earlier, if the lawyer or the toyin, whoever it is able to influence his client to do the right thing and to compromise, whatever should be, let it be so. Okay, we beat over it for the fifth time. Okay.
May one put a TRO, a temporary restraining order, in civil courts on a property that's in dispute?
Well, so a TRO in halacha is as follows. You see, the halachic term for TRO is an ikul, ein yud kuf vov lamed. Usually, this vehicle, this instrument, is being used as a stop order. Simple as that. Keeping things at hold. Now, the only way to do it is going to courts. Although going to court is halachically not the right thing to do, unless Beis Din permitted to do so because, for whatever reason, I'm not going now to, maybe he's going to ask about it, I don't know. But what really needs to be here is, it's like a first aid situation. Namely, that if simultaneously with filing for TRO in court, a hazmona is being sent to Beis Din to tell the person, whoever the adversary is, I want to sit down with you, but I'm just putting a stop order because I'm afraid you might do who knows what. That is permissible, but it has to be simultaneously done with a hazmona to Beis Din.
If I can add to that, people may not be aware, but once you have a shtar berurin that's signed, then under Article 75, the court can grant a TRO in aid of arbitration. It's a slightly different standard than a regular injunction, but it can be granted. And there's another thing that I recommend, and that is to give the Beis Din the right, after you sign the shtar berurin, to issue a TRO, which is an ikul. And it's actually complicated how to get that enforced, because you can only get the final psak enforced, but it can be written in such a way. So TRO can be granted by a Beis Din or by a court to aid a Beis Din once you've signed the shtar berurin or you have an agreement to go to Beis Din.
Are the litigants entitled to an explanation of the ruling?
Well, purely halakhically speaking, only in a situation when they suspect based in not having done the right thing. So, for the most part, the one who lost is certainly convinced that Beis Din did the wrong thing. From our opinion, and from what we saw over time, you see the way how the verdict in Beis Din, the decision in Beis Din is being written, is very often quite different than it would be if you get the same in courts. Namely, you know, it's, if you get some decision in court, it's written very fancy, the background, the whole story from the beginning to the end. But in Beis Din, we would like to keep it as short as possible. We don't want to enter a minefield from who knows what. So therefore, we are keeping it as short as possible. And again, from experience, we do know, trying to explain and to explain to explain doesn't get us very far. The only thing we can do is to calm down the person, to tell him, look, we looked into it, yes, we did, yes. Did you? Yes, we did. Yes, we did. And that's what you could do. It's a very unfortunate situation. But we do see very often is also that based in feels, I mean, that people feel that only have a recourse after the interim was already concluded. In other words, not an appeals court, not at all, but they feel, you know, in particular in the age of emails, that communication with Beis Din is free of charge, and not only free of charge, I don't care about the charge, but, you know, we could take advantage. Now you passed an idea, so why did you do that? Why did you do this? It's like children, very often like children, forgive me the term, they cannot come to terms that please make a closure to your case, move on with life. This is the psak and move on with it.
Is a ruling in Beis Din subject to an appeal? Is a ruling in Beis Din subject to an appeal?
Well, to an appeal. Now, you know, usually not. What we mean to say by this is that it's final. It is true that you have in that the whole Masechta Horias, right, where we're talking about Beis Din having made a mistake. In Eretz Israel today, in the state of Israel, you have a whole structure which is reflecting the structure of courts where you have a whole structure of a lower court, higher court, coming up to the Supreme Court. And in Beis Din also there you have a very similar structure like Bedin Mechozi until you come to the Bedin Elyon and so on and so forth, which was the whole to do, how to write Ishtor Biruin to permit it even, right? So Rav Herzog, Zichron Elevrocha, and other Dayonim drafted this kind of Ishtor Biruin to make it possible. But in principle, that's what it is. And I'm trying to say here again, it should be for the benefit of the Baledin, of the litigants, to know that there's closure on the case. If Chas V'Shalom it happens, the people have to divorce. The worst thing is, if they cannot have closure. If there's a situation of when there are children, there's never a closure. And you know it very well. And in terror, what should happen really is that you finish with the case, move on. Moveon.org. I'm sorry.
Service announcements, and then we're going to open to questions from anybody else who I have. So the first, okay. So I'm told that people who want to ask questions should please come to the front so we can give you a mic, or you know, someplace close because we can't hear people from the back unless you're sitting up front. You should try to focus your question on not on specific little issues, but on the Beis Din process. But before we go to the question of the public, I just two announcements. Number one, we have cards in the back. If you can fill out your contact information, we're trying to update our database. People change their phones. People change their addresses, if you don't mind, so that way we can send you any notices for the future. The second thing I want to say again is that we have sponsorship opportunities for BHI projects. I can't emphasize enough that the Business Halacha Institute is dependent upon public funds. Unlike lawyers, Vaniba Seichem, we charge by the hour, and whether you make your argument before the judge for 2 minutes or 20 minutes, you still charge the client for the time you spend in court and for all the research. The Dayanim don't charge for research. They only charge for the time they spent with the person, a nominal charge just to keep the person to know that he can't just sit there just to ask the question. But all the research, the halachas, everything else they do, they bechabura or themselves, there's no charge to the client for that. That's all dependent about public support. So again, there are opportunities for sponsorships, or you make a donation before you leave, or any other time, because really, the Bezdin is dependent upon the public funds. And now I open the floor to questions.
When you usually have a contract that is being interpreted in Bezdin...
Mike, introduce yourself first. Introduce yourself first.
Moshe Newman. That's good enough. When you come to Bezdin with a contract, many times people do not think that they're going to be going to Bezdin. Do you have to have a minefield that you come into Bezdin where somebody doesn't think about putting into it or doing the necessary kinyonim, where it's raised, technicality, it's a halachic technicality, but you didn't do the right kinyan, and therefore you lose, even though on the merits you're right. Or that you didn't have the proper language in the contract of Tanai, that there's all sorts of language that after a maisa people say you should have had that language in it. The Shuta D'Dayani let the Dayanim overrule technical shortcomings that were not thought about when you were doing the original contract.
I will give here one comment and then give it over to the lawyers here. The first thing is that, halachically speaking, what you have are two different sets of agreements that people sign when they come to Beis Din. One is a Hebrew one, Shtor Birurim, which is very broad, which is worded very broad. In other words, that it really covers everything in principle. However, the minefield is, as you mentioned, is once you have the agreement for arbitration, which should be enforceable in court, when then it wasn't written up properly, that might be a problem. Now, do the Ionim need to have a good education? That yes. Do we have a good education on that? I don't know. It might sometimes, yes. There might be not enough education on that. For that part, I would say that the two lawyers that we have here certainly do a good service if they point out at the time when the agreement for arbitration is being signed that maybe this or that is being missing, so later on it should be enforced. I just want to add something here which is relevant to the issue, and this is as follows. As you know very well, that in absence of people adhering to the Pesach Din of Beis Din, so Beis Din could issue a siruf. Siruf means that it's been publicized all over, Pliny Almoni did not listen to Beis Din. I personally don't like it, and I personally don't even do it. Our Beis Din doesn't do it, for the simple reason because social pressure is only so much effective, and it's not really the right thing to do, in my opinion. So what is really left here is just eventually finding into court, and as Mr. Vida said it earlier, if I'm not mistaken, that for the most part, courts don't like to overrule a verdict of an arbitration panel. So yes, it's true. So we should have really having the Grimm's arbitration written the proper fashion. Is there anything you want to add here? Necessary or not necessary?
Yeah, I would like to add that I think that part of our professional approach of a Ben Torah, who's a professional as an attorney or as an accountant, has to be that he has to have a higher level of education in this matter. It's not like the old joke, religion is religion and business is business, but rather we have to put the religion, as was remarked earlier, into the business contract. As a standard matter, I put in the agreement validation clause that I received from the Business Halacha Institute a long time ago as the last clause of a contract, and that creates all the kinyanim that takes away all the claims that could be an invalid contract. I also look out to make sure that there's no inyanim of interest of heter iska issues. You have to sort of button up the contract from a Torah perspective too. These are, you want to make sure that, and it's a matter if the other side doesn't ask for it or your client doesn't ask for it. I think it's an achrayus that you have to make sure that this is going to be an enforceable contract and that it's a kosher contract according to Jewish law, that there's nothing wrong in there. When I review someone else's contract and I know it's between Eden, I will typically, search the contract for the word interest to see if there's an issue, and sometimes there really is. And I have one particular client. He doesn't enter into any heter iska investments, any investments that require a heter iska. That's just his standard. And this past week, I had a situation where the contract provided that in the event that the managing partner had to guarantee a bank loan, and the bank loan came against the guarantor, the other members of the LLC would indemnify him, and that's obviously an issue of heter iska, because if you're guaranteeing somebody else's personal guarantee, then you're providing indemnification on interest money to the bank. So that became a negotiable issue, and the other side had to take it out because they wanted my client to invest, and he wasn't going to invest where he needed a heter iska. Or a standard operating agreement, and you don't have a heter, I would put in a heter iska among when there's new operating agreement among parties. So I'm just saying, what you have to do is view, it's not just a secular contract, but you're viewing the contract from a Torah perspective.
Thank you. What is it? It's okay. Thank you very much. Kol tov.
Shalom Aleichem, my name is Eliyahu David Chaimov. My question is, when parties sign a Shtar Berurin, and the Bezin, every Bezin has their own Shtar Berurin, which language is important to have in regards to the matter being limited to the matter at hand between the two litigants, or the language should be a broad language, not limited to the matter at hand? Which means sometimes the parties could come to Bezin to litigate about a certain matter, but then involve other matters into the Bezin and come for another session as well. So is it better to keep the Shtar Berurin and the Din Torah to the specific matter of the litigants?
Excellent question. Ask your lawyer.
Well, how does it work in Bezin?
No, Bezin is not an advisory board. Bezin adjudicates whatever people would like to adjudicate on. So therefore, you ask your lawyer what you feel is, or the Torah, whoever it should be, yourself, your wife, doesn't matter, what you want this matter to be adjudicated on. It's not necessarily our job to do so. No, what they are writing on, what they are signing you on is on something else. What they mean to say is they don't want to be limited, that at the end of the day, they don't want to be limited that their decision might be challenged in this or other way, and therefore they want to protect themselves for this, right? And therefore the right particular language for this. But just to broaden on matters which are not related to the Pesak Din, to the issue adjudicated? I don't know. I don't think so.
I just want to add that maybe this is addressing your question a little bit more. When you come into Bezdin, before you sign a Shtar Berurin, two things have to happen. Who's the Teveya? Sometimes there's a Machlekes who the Teveya is. I say, you or me? He says, you or me? That's the first thing that has to be discussed, because as was mentioned earlier, Teveya speaks first. So who's the Teveya? And the second thing has to be is, what are we talking about? Right now we have a case that they can't come because they don't know what they want to come to Bezin for. having a big issue. They don't want to. They don't want to. So we said, until you decide what you want to come for, we're not open. So that also has to be decided by the. It could be decided in front of the dayanim, but I mean only in the situation where they're in the ballpark and they know what they're going to be talking about. So then you should write it down, as you know, as Chaim said, you have to write down. So you shouldn't get into, you know, my grandmother 17 years ago had a fight with your grandmother. I want to discuss that now also. You know, with it, that's not going to happen, obviously. But that's part of what everybody should do when they come and sit down in front of the Beis Din.
The issue of signing, the standard language of many Batei Din is any and all disputes between the parties. There is a lot of ramifications to that. Part of the reason that that's done is because I've actually seen this in court where it specifies dispute A, B, and C, and then the Beis Din ended up deciding dispute D. And then whoever lost that comes into court and said the Beis Din had no authority to deal with that issue. So that's why Batei Din like to put in any and all disputes. Now, the truth is that if you submit it to Beis Din, even without a writing at that point, it is enforceable. But it's an evidentiary matter. You have to prove that. The second ramification is there's a question of who decides arbitrability. So if you can go to court, and technically, if the issue of arbitrability is decided by a court, which means that if you say, oh yeah, I agree to arbitration, but only on the following, who decides whether you have to go to arbitration? So when you write any and all, then the Court of Appeals has held that that would include giving to the Beis Din the decision of whether or not you have to arbitrate. And Supreme Court of the United States under the FAA also holds like that. So the word any and all really has very big ramifications. The problem is people want to limit it to a dispute. And the drawback of any and all is that if the party doesn't come to Beis Din and you don't specify what the dispute is, you can't compel him to come to Beis Din. So it's really something, as Rabbi Cohen said, that you need to discuss with your attorney exactly the language that has to be put there. Rabbi Cohen over here is talking about what the Din Torah is about. It's usually good to write what the Din Torah is about, and then any and all related subjects is probably the best language. And the Beis Din decides what's related. There's one Beis Din I know where they have such a language. It's about dispute A, B, and C, and any related matters, and whether or not it's related is decided by the Beis Din.
My Zakheim question, a point of relief clarification. The Rav mentioned that when it comes to a Din Torah, the Rav prefers that the litigants themselves are the ones who start the case and not the Tohanim. Experience that I've had many times have been that the problem cases, in order to have it resolved, are the Tohanim. They take their cases on, they elaborate, and they flower it up in such a case that it really muddles the whole case. Is Rav saying that in his Beis Din, it is initiated, the conversations, the procedures are by the litigants themselves or by the Tohanim?
Well, I was quite clear about it, that we are telling the Balei Din to present the case. The Tohan later on could fill in, certainly, and he could come up with halachic arguments, other arguments, doesn't matter. But we would like to hear the story from the Badin himself. I said, we saw this.
I'm checking on it because I've been involved, and then always it starts with the Tohanim.
I cannot comment on what you saw. I just could tell you what we do. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Very good. Thank you.
My name is Shlomo David Schlanger. Just a question. I don't know if this has been touched upon. I believe part of the issue that maybe the whole issue of a Beis Din, going to a Beis Din, has a little bit of a off-color flavor to it. It's the question of enforcement. Seems people go to a Beis Din gives a psak. Even the person that wins doesn't seem to get anything out of it because doesn't seem to get any enforcement.
I'm sorry, if I'm not mistaken, this question came up already numerous times, and we said that once you sign agreement for arbitration, and Beis Din would insist that you sign the arbitration, it's enforceable in courts.
So, in other words, so it's going back to the courts, and it's going through this whole process of the court system, which could take years.
Right. So, halachically speaking, you should go to Beis Din, not in courts, right?
I would like to add, if you don't mind, one of the most difficult things I ever did in my life was somebody in my shul was considered a seer of Ladin. So I went to his house 11:30 at night, and I told him, you came back from Eretz Yisrael, you're expecting to get an aliyah in shul on Shabbos, you're not going to get an aliyah in this shul. You're not getting an aliyah in the shul. I told him that. Now, I don't like the fact that Beis Din calls me up and I have to, so to speak, do their work for them. But I did. And that's not pleasant to do. But many things aren't pleasant to do. But we have to try to do them. That's what our situation is. Now, the other thing that has to happen is that the guy who loses, I'm not saying anybody should become the mounted police here, but the guy who loses should be feeling comfortable. He should be made to feel uncomfortable that he's not doing what Beis Din said to do. Beis Din can only do what the community is going to back them for. That's part of what I said before. This is a double, you know, we have two parts working here together. I want Beis Din to work when it's good for me, and I want Beis Din to work when it's not good for me. That can't be. I want Beis Din to work because it's good for us. It's good for us. That's what has to be. That's what has to be. I want to say one more thing. I once sat on a Beis Din with Rav Chaim Cohen Shlita, and it was really a video of what a Beis Din should look like. And I'll never forget, I was sitting there, I was a little tired, I'd flown in from Chicago, and I crossed my legs. And he pushed my leg off. See, when you walk into a Beis Din, all cell phones should be off. Off. Not vibrate, off. Nothing. Not airport mode, off. Airplane mode, I mean, off. And everybody should be sitting there, the dayanim and the litigants with pardon the expression, with the fear of God. And what Rabbi Cohen said before, if a Tayin or a lawyer comes into Beis Din, the decorum is, you speak when I let you speak. You can't say a word until I let you speak. That's what also learned Rabbi Cohen. And that creates a different decorum. And not for fundraising, give all your money you want to BHI. But I also learned something else from Rabbi Cohen. If you have a Beis Din, we don't do this yet. We don't have the guts to do it yet. We're starting. It's taking us a long time. Charge. An accountant, very professional accountant, told me, five lawyers in the room. Nothing to do with you. Five lawyers in the room. The litigants, quote unquote, for the Bali Din can be paying thousands of dollars an hour. Thousands of dollars an hour. So what did the litigants think of the dayanim who are charging $180 a session per dayan, which goes to the Beis Din? What does that make? What does a person think? What does a person think? What's going on in his head? Somebody told us recently, take care of this issue. Whatever it costs for a lawyer, that's what I want to pay the Beis Din. So we told him, okay, it's $1,200. Four people, we gave him a break. We called the lawyer. The lawyer said he would charge $400 an hour for this. And it was 1200. It was 12 hours. It's $4,800. We'll charge $1,200. He was too upset. Everybody who's a dayan has a postmaster's degree and a postdoctorate degree and post, I don't know how many letters should be after his name. That's what this is about here. Beis Din is not a fly-by-night thing that a few guys in Kailul who never couldn't get a job, became Dayan. That's not what a Beis Din is. Beis Din is a group of Talmidei Chachamim who are dedicating themselves to make sure that Klal Yisrael is in a better place. Your question is a very serious question.
I just want to respond. I think there's a misunderstanding in the question. Article 75 of the CPLR is intended to short-circuit litigation. That means you go to arbitration, you get a psak, which I also recommend, as Rabbi Cohen does with all these psakim, very brief. I would just say, A owes B $100, end of psak. You bring that to court, you can get that confirmed as a judgment. Article 75 says, instead of litigating for 5 years in court, bring us the arbitration determination. We will then enter that as a judgment. Under ordinary circumstances, if there's no opposition, that can be done between 3 to 6 months. If there's opposition, it'll be done within 1 year. But they won't. There's no discovery. And you do, unfortunately, have people who try to get out of it. By and large, the statistics are that almost every Psak Bezdin is confirmed. After it's confirmed, you have a judgment or you have an order if there's something that has to be done. And I've done this many times, and I've seen it done many times. So you short-circuit it. Yes, if you have a recalcitrant litigant, it'll take you a year until you actually get your money. But if he has money and you have the right you have the right parties, you will get what the Beis Din ordered you to get.
Thank you very much. We're running out of time. Thank you all for coming. I just want to mention one thing. There were some questions about provision, halacha of provisions and contracts. BHI offers a service. Lawyers submit contracts, provisions for review from a halachic perspective. You're all welcome to submit any questionable contracts that you have. Thank you all for coming.